the saga of the 2nd District congressional election is partially over. This is Maine's Political Pulse. I'm Erwin Gratz. Republican Congressman Bruce Poliquin Friday dropped his request for a recount of ballots. It had been about half completed. Poliquin wrote on Facebook that his observers found the recount increasing his lead over his closest opponent. But there was yet no sign the recount would give Poliquin an absolute majority of votes cast. Without that, ranked choice voting kicks in, and after adding the second choice votes of two independent candidates, Democrat Jared Golden wins. Poliquin challenged the constitutionality of ranked choice voting in a federal lawsuit, but that's not helping him either. I discussed the federal court ruling with our Political Pulse team, State House Bureau Chief Mal Leary and Chief Political Correspondent Steve Messler. Steve, let me ask you first. We got this week a ruling from Federal District Judge Lance Walker about the constitutionality of ranked choice voting. What did the judge rule, and what does that mean for that second congressional district race?
Well, the judge basically ruled two big things. One was he denied Bruce Poliquin's request to invalidate the runoff portion of the election that he lost to Jared Golden, the Democrat. And he also denied Bruce Poliquin's request to hold a new election. Poliquin basically wanted him to invalidate the runoff, and if not that, then hold a new election. Well, he was denied both of those requests, and he was rejected on an assortment of constitutional claims. Judge Lance Walker basically dismantled each one of those, and in great detail. It was a 30-page ruling. There was a couple of takeaways that, as I saw it. One is that he pointed to the Constitution, specifically the 10th Amendment.
The 10th Amendment, of course, is that amendment that says those powers not explicitly granted to the federal government are reserved to the states or the people.
And basically, part of that is that states have a broad authority to determine how they want to run elections. That includes picking the day and the time and when they occur. And also the method. That's why some states have runoffs, some states have plurality elections, and in Maine, we now have ranked choice voting. And Walker basically said, he made what is basically a federalist argument, and Mal got a kick out of this yesterday, which is that federalism is the idea that states have rights and that they can push back against the prospect of tyranny by the federal government via those rights. And so Walker basically said, this is an ingenious way, this authority, to delineate those rights. And so that was one big takeaway. And I'll let Mal jump in.
I mean, basically, Judge Walker threw everything that Poliquin argued out the door and said it's wrong. I mean, to translate to the vernacular of most people in Maine, taking away the legal niceties of how he ruled, he said everything you're asking for is wrong and everything you're arguing about is wrong. So this has got to be viewed as a setback for Poliquin in his attempt to get this race overturned on a legal front. Now, that said, I think there's pretty broad agreement among observers that we can expect that he'll be filing an appeal with the First Circuit Court, because he can. He's made it very clear that he considers this a huge issue, far beyond one election, far beyond this congressional district. So I believe we'll end up seeing this go up one more level of arguments down at the First Circuit Court of Appeals in Boston.
What's also interesting about the 10th Amendment, too, is that if you recall during the Tea Party movement of 2009 and 2010, Republicans really embraced this idea of states' rights, okay? And also there's a little bit of irony in the fact that that is where Poliquin cut his teeth in seeking elected office. He ran as a Tea Party candidate, you know, espousing of states' rights. And here we are dealing with a judge further cementing the fact that he's going to lose this election, or he has lost this election, and he's using the 10th Amendment as a basis for justifying that.
And people forget that Poliquin not only ran for governor as a Tea Party type candidate, but he also ran for the United States Senate and lost the Republican nomination in 2012.
You know, the thing I just find completely perplexing about Poliquin's statement was he addressed in no way the actual ruling by Judge Walker, but instead pointed to this seemingly unrelated issue of voters saying they received second district ballots, even though they lived in the first district. I mean, this has been dismissed from the state election officials who have refused to investigate because, you know, they basically say, look, the tabulation machines that accept these ballots on election day would reject any ballot that was not from that district. They're programmed to accept only the elections that you're voting in. So it'd almost be like, you know, taking a takeout menu from a Chinese restaurant and putting it in. It would have the same practical effect. It would spit it back out. And yet he's clinging to this idea that there's a bunch of errors in this election, and none of that is borne out. I did talk to some people yesterday, and of course they are, the person I spoke with is Jim Monteleone. He's an attorney with the main committee for ranked choice voting. So he has a slanted perspective, perhaps. But his legal diagnosis here seems to ring true, which is that Poliquin, the further he takes this, he risks some unintended consequences, because what he is doing by challenging this to various levels of the court is reaffirming the constitutionality of ranked choice voting. I mean, that was what really stood out, in addition to what Mal just pointed out, from Walker's ruling yesterday. Now we have a legal bedrock which other states, if they are considering ranked choice voting, can consider and may embolden them to adopt this election method. And I know that there are advocates, national advocates, that are trying to do just that. And if those states are worried about heading into court and these protracted legal battles, they can look to Maine now and potentially the First Circuit Court of Appeals if it gets that far and see, well, you know, the courts have said there isn't any constitutional concerns, at least as it pertains to federal elections. And they may say, you know what, let's give this thing a try, especially if they've had the kind of elections that Maine has had, where there's a spoiler effect, which was the big impetus for adopting this reform.
Well, we'll see what happens as we go down the road there. Let's move on to a couple other subjects. Let's talk about what has been happening with the incumbents in Washington. Mal, one of the things that was up this past week were these Senate resolutions to kind of withdraw support for what Saudi Arabia is doing in Yemen. What has happened there?
The action has been in the Senate on a couple of different fronts. One was the resolution that was passed overwhelmingly that basically says the United States is not going to support in any way, shape, or form the efforts by Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates in their involvement in what amounts to a civil war in Yemen. That was a slap down to the Trump administration.
But what is the practical effect of that, if any?
Well, there's no the practical effect may be political, Irwin. It's not going to be a force of law, because the House of Representatives is still controlled by the Republicans, and they will not pass that resolution. I doubt if it's even taken up. And then guess what? The Democrats take control, and they will have to decide then whether to even bring the resolution up to be considered. And I got to point out, it was a very torturous process in the Senate, with all kinds of amendments brought forth by some Republicans to make it more palatable to them, you know, trying to make sure, well, this doesn't mean the United States can't help out in an effort to try to keep the rebels from Yemen attacking other folks in other countries. That was a John Cornyn amendment, a senator from Texas. So those were, you know, some of the very interesting parts of that whole argument that ended up with basically the Senate telling the Trump administration, we don't agree with you on this policy. And given the fact, of course, that the Senate's controlled by the Republicans, that has political significance.
How did Maine's two senators vote on this resolution?
Both supported the final resolution.
The other thing, of course, that continues to kind of play itself out slowly, the Robert Mueller investigation. We had the sentencing now of Michael Cohen, the attorney, and the additional disclosure by Mueller's team that they have got an admission from the National Enquirer's publisher that they did indeed pay for a story just in order to kill it so that it wouldn't affect Trump's election.
What's happening now in the background, of course, is the president has said he's going to nominate William Barr to be attorney general. Barr was attorney general under President H.W. Bush. What both of our senators are saying is, look, we're going to listen to the hearings. We want to hear what he answers. But both say the bottom line is they want to hear a pledge from him from Barr that he will not interfere in the independence whatsoever in any form of Mr. Mueller's independent investigation.
And Barr has had some critical things to say about the Mueller investigation in the last couple of years.
He generally has thought of executive power as far more broad than what many constitutional scholars have said.
You mentioned they'll be listening for a promise that Barr won't interfere, but neither King nor Collins serve on the Judiciary Committee. Is there any way that they can guarantee that they'll get that promise?
Well, I asked that question of Senator Collins, and she said, be assured that question will be asked by somebody on the Judiciary Committee. Senator Collins has been watching these confirmation hearings since 1996, so I think she probably has a pretty good handle on the questions that will be asked.
Steve Mistler, we have got our first cabinet appointment nominee from Governor-elect Janet Mills, and it's a big one, too, for Health and Human Services. Who is she interested in?
She's going to appoint a woman named Jean Lambrew. She's from Cape Elizabeth, graduated from high school there in 1985. But perhaps more importantly, she served in the Obama administration, first at the Federal Department of Health and Human Services, and in that role, basically coordinated work and passage and implementation of the Affordable Care Act. Now, this is important for a lot of reasons, politically, of course, because Democrats ran effectively on protecting the Affordable Care Act and health insurance and pre-existing conditions. This appointment essentially is a sign that Janet Mills takes that very seriously, and that Maine's integration with the Affordable Care Act will be cemented through this appointment. Jean Lambrew also worked at the White House between 2011 and 2017 as Deputy Assistant to the President for Health Policy, and that included everything between the Affordable Care Act, Medicare, Medicaid, and CHIP. All of those programs are administered at the state level through DHHS, which will be her new job. And I should point out that Ms. Lambrew has a lot of work to do at DHHS. I mean, some of the biggest changes during the LePage administration occurred at that agency, and they were very big changes, everything from child welfare to Medicaid to welfare reform. This is really ground zero in a lot of ways for the Mills administration, because from their perspective, I believe that they feel like that agency needs to be cleaned out, overhauled, and put on a much different path than it has been for the last 8 years.
I was going to say, historically, this is an agency that has been notoriously difficult to control.
It's always had problems under every administration that I'm familiar with in the last three decades, okay? So it doesn't necessarily matter whether it's a Republican or a Democrat or an independent. I mean, I think Angus King had some trouble there, too.
As did Jim Longley.
Right. And so it's a sprawling bureaucracy with a multitude of programs that it administers and is responsible for. It's kind of like plugging the hole in a leaky dam a lot of times, and it can be sort of a thankless job. And so this is not a glamorous position. This is where Jean Lambrew has decided to put the next step in her career, and I think this is a pretty big appointment for Governor-elect Mills.
And Lambrew's going to be facing an awful lot of leftover issues from the LePage administration, including the most recent one, where he now says he's still going to go forward and sign a contract to spend money that the courtmaster says would be illegally spent if he did it.
And Mal's talking, of course, about the step-up facility from the Riverview Psychiatric Center, which has been really a hot potato here.
Yeah, this is the facility that is designed for Riverview Psychiatric Center patients who've been found not criminally responsible for crimes. And the thinking has been that they don't really necessarily need to be long-term at Riverview, and this is the facility they would move out to. It's also, I think, one of the steps that they've been looking to take in order to get Riverview recertified as well.
So all this is going to fall onto her, and I might add, on the incoming Attorney General, Aaron Fry, who's also going to be faced with, what do I do? The governor has signed a contract to spend this money. You know, can I rule it illegal, or do I have to go to court to find it illegal? All sorts of stuff is going to start happening right after she takes office.
Mal Leary there, along with Steve Mistler, and that's Maine's Political Pulse for this week. We air abbreviated versions of Maine's Political Pulse Fridays on Morning Edition, or you can tune in here on Weekend Edition. A podcast version of the conversation is available online at mainpublic.org/politicalpulse or wherever you get your podcasts. Our producer is Willis Ryder Arnold. Music is by Rob Holt. I'm Erwin Gratz. Back with you all next week.